Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to another amazing pod, Late Night with Chefs, back at it again. Truffle Boy, a.k.a. Vlad Bryanstead, is here with Tyler Brassel, our newest guest member and our newest series. So with no further ado, I'd like to introduce Tyler Brassel, the man, the myth, the legend.
Cheers.
Cheers. He made us some beautiful old fashions. We'll also be making cocktails. Little by little.
Incremental change.
Yeah, so
makes good results.
I haven't really I know a lot of people that follow me personally are gonna know, you know, who Tyler Brassel is. But to everybody kind of learning about you today, what was the thing that inspired you to become a chef and go down this journey?
Wow, that's deep. What inspired me? My mother would hate me, but she knows it's true. My mom is a awful cook. God-awful. And growing up, it was like, I didn't want to eat pancakes all the time because my mom would just come home and be like, I don't feel like cooking. Let's have pancakes. And so we'd have pancakes multiple times a week. And I was like, God, I don't want this anymore. So I would just cook something. And then I just started watching Julia Child and those guys on PBS way before Food Network. And I would be like, I can do that. That looks like fun. I would just start messing around in the kitchen, making a huge mess and like, my parents would come home and be like, what the hell? And then I'd be like, but look, I made tomato sauce. So that's how it started. You know? Not a bad thing.
I'm just going to turn up the volume here on the mic. All right, that's a little bit better.
And then when I turned like 14, 15, I wanted to buy a car, and my dad was like, get a job, and the town I grew up in was really, really small, and it was like, the only options were a restaurant or a grocery store, and my brother worked at the grocery store, so that wasn't going to happen. So I started working at this little mom and pop Italian joint.
And as your first experience, when you walked in there, was it enticing? Did it grab you? Like, what were those kind of first shift, first day?
Oh my God, it was a shithole, and I was scared to death. Literally, it was horrible. But I don't know, I was just like, I'll just make this through. And I got through the day, and then at the end of the night, we're all just sort of hanging out and reminiscing of the day. And well, this is cool. It's like a group of people, you know. It's only 14. But it was fun because it was different. There were people that weren't like me.
And in that sense, what does that mean?
I was like this farmer kid, like grew up in a really small little area. Now I'm hanging out with adults that aren't my family, you know, but I became a new family. So I don't know how to describe that, but it was fun and exciting and crazy, and I mean, we all worked really well together and just got it done, got a job done. At the end of the night, you're like, yeah, we did that.
And then what would you say, you know, what age is this at? And then
I worked there from when I was 14 until I was almost 18, and then I had to go to college, and I wanted to join the military, and my dad was like, no, go to college.
The military, really?
Yeah. And, my dad was like, you can go to the military after school. Had I known then what I know now about it, shit, I should have gone to the military and then got out and went to school.
Right.
But whatever. So I went to culinary school because I thought cooking was fun and I liked it. And let's just make a career or something fun. So went to culinary school, 18. Scared to death again, but same thing, right? Like meeting new people and making connections and, you know, all sort of in the same boat together. fun.
Gotcha. Okay, let's, and then fast forward, we'll jump back into culinary school.
Yeah. Again. I went to culinary school when it wasn't cool.
When it was convicts and fucking, it was not cool. When it was like a service that you went to school.
Yeah, it was like a trade school. Yep. I mean, there were a couple, you know, celebrity chefs and stuff, but. Yeah, it wasn't the cool thing to do. Being a chef wasn't cool. Like when I told my mom I wanted to go to culinary school and be a chef, she cried.
See, for me, it was the opposite. I wanted to go to culinary school.
Right.
And it's nice to have that parent back you up, but at the same time, then you have that person that you kind of want to prove and be like, see, told you I wanted to do this. And
oh, yeah, she sings a way different song now. My son, the chef. You know, and like I go over to my parents' house for like, you know, a Sunday supper or something, and my mom pretends like she doesn't know how to cook a damn thing. You know, she's like, can you do this? And of course, I just take over and start doing it, but like, what the hell did you do all week? And to feed yourself all week.
Right.
You know? But whatever. I like it. It's fun.
No, I always take over the kitchen. Wherever I'm at, even at like a family gathering or anything, even at a random kitchen, I'll... There's something about like, I want to cook my own food to me personally. And I think a lot of chefs have issues with that. Is at the end of the day of cooking for everybody else, you don't want to cook for yourself. And like I've made it a habit to overcome that, and now I'm almost like OCD when it's not me touching the food.
Yeah, but there's a thing. Like, I mean, you know, we both do it. We eat crappy food at the end of the night. Like, we put out like
But it's like when we do that, food. It's like rolling the dice.
Yeah, but it's like you just don't want to.
You don't want to do the service.
I mean, I love it, but, you know, when you've done a 12-hour day and you're, like, done, you're like, I really don't feel like cooking.
Right.
People think that we have this, like, glorious lifestyle, like, we come home and, you know.
Cooking foie gras.
Like, yeah, like, the fridge is full. Like,
just eating caviar and potato chips.
Yeah.
While watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those moments do happen.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, there's a surplus. There's a this, there's a deal, there's a that, and we take advantage of it.
Sure.
So kind of going back to the journey after culinary school, what was Tyler Brassel doing?
Oh, wow.
What were your next 5 steps?
I had an instructor in school who was like, if you really want to move up the ladder in this business, go work at someplace brand new where like everybody in the same place is on the same.
Right.
And so I did that. And I found a restaurant that was opening independent.
So before we talk about that, was Michelin a thing? Was it talked about? Was it taught about?
No.
Was it fantasized and
idealized about?
Right.
Not in this country. No.
But in culinary school, was that a prevalent subject? Like, was that something that was like, I'm going to be a Michelin star chef? Or was it, I'm just trying to cook cool food and enjoy my life and make a decent living?
No, culinary school wasn't either of those. Culinary school was like, learn how to do all this stuff and then figure
out. It's not learn how to do it. It's do all this stuff, right? Because you learn about it in the class, but then you actually physically have, like,
yeah.
Every kid that graduates culinary school has made stock and
hollandaise
and the basics, right?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
But if you don't keep practicing it at your current job, then you kind of lose it.
I don't think that you lose it. I think that it's just sort of.
You need to get it refreshed.
Yeah,
sure.
It's just sort of put there in the background, and then like something comes up, and you're like, "Oh, how do I do this?" or "What's this?" and you just sort of do it. And that's what I think differently when I went to culinary school than what it is now. Like when I went, it was like hardcore, like this. There wasn't much creativity in culinary school.
I would have hated it then.
Probably. It was very military.
Because I was so creative that my chef was like, yo, chill. Learn the basics.
Yeah, there was
the foundations.
No creativity.
It's funny because Chef Rob was like, I made a compressed watermelon dish. And he was like, do you even know who created that initially? He's like, my friend, Omar. And I was like, oh, shit. And he's like, you're making a fucking shitty version of it. So how about you learn the basics first? And, you know, those little moments in culinary school, as much as in the moment you're like, fuck this guy, fuck this place, I'm so much better than this, they humble you because then later on in life when you get other people to tell you the same shit, you're like, all right, maybe I should fucking get this shit checked.
And right.
Get my, you know, fundamentals grounded before I start thinking this and that. And I did that. I went back and re-solidified, you know, those fundamentals.
You can't do anything if you don't understand the basic, right?
So culinary school, go to this new restaurant, everything's new.
Yep. Well, no, everything wasn't new. The restaurant was a shithole.
Oh.
But it was a new restaurant.
How can it be a new restaurant and a shithole?
Well, because it was a restaurant previously.
And then somebody just bought it and was like, okay, we're this today?
Yeah. So what's interesting is that the restaurant was on the water, like on the waterfront, beautiful, whatever. And if you look at the building, to the left was like a driveway. And originally that space was like a boat launch.
Mm-hmm.
But they had closed it off and built the restaurant, whatever. And somebody drove her car off that ledge, and the restaurant was called the Gangplank. I'm not kidding. Not the restaurant that I worked in, but the restaurant previously was the Gangplank.
Okay,
and so someone drove off the... Yeah. Anyway, the guy that bought it, Walter, was really super cool and owned a bunch of restaurants and knew what he was doing. And we built the new restaurant. It was beautiful. The front of the house was amazing. It was on the water. It was gorgeous. The kitchen was old and had never been renovated.
So what was your day-to-day like, and what were you getting paid an hour to do that?
I think it was like the highest paid job I had ever had up until then, and I think I was making like $9 an hour.
That's not that bad. I thought it was going to be more steep.
Yeah, that's like $9.
And this was when, like,
1996.
Jeez, so I was 1 year old.
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
I was still in fucking Ukraine.
Yeah.
Chilling.
Yeah.
You were out there busting your ass for $9 an hour.
$9 an hour, that was big money, dude. No joke.
I think it is, even in that time, like,
that was big money.
But was it, there was no overtime? There was no...
Oh, yeah, there was.
There was overtime?
Yeah. Yeah. The minimum wage was like $4.50. Yeah, I was making big money. That was huge. Another thing that's on my mind today. Like, how do guests not know it's time to leave? If you look at the restaurant, the entire restaurant is completely empty. Everybody's cleaned up. The bar is cleaned up. Everything's ready. They literally flip the switch and put the lights off, and people are still sitting there.
Do you have friends like that, though?
No.
But have you been around people like that? You know what I mean? Like, there's just that type of person. You gotta understand it, that in their mind, their perspective, and their reality is, I paid.
Oh.
They're still...
I mean, obviously, it's because we work in the service industry, so we have a different appreciation. But, like, I don't know. What world do you live in where you don't... I don't know. That was tonight. I mean, we were verging on an hour for that last table to leave. Everybody else had left almost 1 hour before.
But they came, you know, later. They spent their money. I think it's different when it's corporate versus personal.
No, I mean, even owning restaurants for years, like, the end of the night, you're like, start turning the lights up. And it's like, okay, people, take the hint. And go. I don't get people like that sometimes.
I mean, I've encountered, you know, like people staying till 4 a.m. at a Russian banquet, which would be unacceptable anywhere else. But some people have an understanding and they're willing to pay. Like, they're like, hey, look, I know you're keeping your people longer here.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Like, that's the type of people.
That's
like,
different.
Hey, that's different.
Yeah.
You put $50 in everybody's pocket, stay 2 hours later, nobody's going to complain.
No one's going to complain.
But then there's those people who are like, you know, ignorance is bliss if nobody's kicking us out.
They've already paid their bill. And like, come on, guys. You know, I don't know. This is me.
I don't know. I think the client's always right, you know?
No.
Would you rather have not taken that table? You know what I mean?
Oh, of course you want the revenue. Of course.
So it's like, you know, it's like those one out of nine out of ten tables is going to be.
Like, that 1 out of 10 tables that's going to cost you more money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But nine are.
Sure.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a difficult area that we're in because.
Okay, here's another. So future conversations down the road, but like, why don't people take the time to write a positive, like send an email and be like, wow, thank you so much. It was a fantastic evening. But the same people that take the time to bitch.
I think because of, you know, there's that analogy when the house is clean, you don't go twice about it, but when the house is dirty, you notice it.
Mm.
So, like, I guess going deeper in that is, like, it's expected that they're going to have a good time because they're paying money for it.
Okay. Fair.
It isn't expected to have a bad time and pay money for it.
Fair. I've sent far more emails about good experiences than I have ever about bad. And, you know, I could easily.
Well, and that's the difference between service or industry people and
yeah,
people who are in the field. And this field is massive. So, you know, from like we keep learning about all these new niche markets that are, because of the internet, because of the world, because of the way things are, it's coming about that you can make. You can make a living just writing recipes or submitting recipes for recipe contests and winning all of them. You know what I mean? There's those people who find a bargain or a deal on something and are able to sell it. So it's just such a wide market. I mean, people are eating all the time. Question is what you want to feed them, are they willing to pay for it? And I think that's where the biggest failures are in a restaurant, right? Because you bring in the food to the restaurant. Like, you're deciding to put this chicken dish on the menu. Is that what the people that are coming there or making the reservations going to buy?
Well, it should be. Like, I mean, ideally, it's not for the most part. But ideally, it would be like the people are coming to experience what you're making, what you're excited about making. Like, how cool would it be? And there are lots of chefs in our industry that do it, but like the items that you're excited to eat and the people come to experience what excites you.
Hi there, listener. We would like to take a moment to thank all our sponsors and welcome any new sponsors to the opportunity of advertising with us. With products cooking demos, brand recognition shoutouts, and other marketing opportunities, let Late Night with Chefs help grow your like-minded business within our rapidly growing industry community. If you would like to explore sponsorship packages for our next show, please email us at latenightwithchefs@gmail.com.
But it's like such a, I think the pandemic kind of, it took us back 10 years, I think.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
We're back in like 08 when comfort food was like, or am I just catching the trend late? Cause like, I think comfort foods, it's been a mix of like this mish fusion of, you know, super low end and super high end ingredient mm-hmm. on a dish, you know, like fried chicken and caviar or potato chip, salt, vinegar, potato chip with caviar. You know, like those things are more and more popular. It's like bringing that comfort yet luxury mm-hmm. in one bite. I think that's been, you know, uptrending nowadays, but like, are we ever, you know, restaurants that are opening nowadays are, they say, you know, we don't want to be this cookie cutter, like, we want to have a little bit more freedom and creativity. But, like, you think that those, you know, stiff places are what's that proper word for it? This stuffy type of environments, you know, that they used to say that, you know, that at the Michelin environment, you have like 3-4 waiters at the table at all times.
I mean, there's always going to be a place for that, but I think most people don't want that.
But then how do you justify charging?
How cool would it be to open a restaurant and literally expose the whole thing, all the expenses and everything? Like everything. You'd be like, hi, welcome. This is how we get to what we charge you. And this is why. Like, here's everything. That'd be crazy. Like, that's just, like, the whole... expose it all.
I don't think people want to see it.
I don't know. I think it might be something. This is crazy. I just had this thought, but that'd be kind of crazy.
I just think... I see what you're saying, like... 25 cents for the tomato, 30 cents for the lettuce.
Well, then, yeah, but that's all obvious shit. Like, what about the other stuff? Like, you know, Greg dropped that plate, and that plate cost $25 for the actual physical plate, right?
I think that would be
not
a
to
cool
mention the
show
that's on it.
Where, you know, you tag all these things. Like, the price is right at a restaurant.
Like, I've always dreamed of having a restaurant where all the employees see everything. It's complete transparency, and they all understand every single thing adds up.
But do you think that's a reality? And, like, how do you cultivate a culture to entice those people in your business?
Well, I think that if all the employees are vested in it and they understand it.
See, like, my next challenge is, like, how do you build a brand around your name to invite those young culinary people that want to learn? And do you have enough to offer? And then this, and like, you know, a lot of people my age right now who are very talented, you know, they have this imposter syndrome where they think, well, I can't charge that much, or I can't do that, or I can't do that. Cause they're like, they know it, they know how to do it, but they're scared that people are going to judge them, which, you know, I don't have personally, but I see a lot of people in the field, even your age. I feel like, you know, imposter syndrome is a big thing where it's like you do something really good and great, and
well, they don't,
you judge yourself for it.
They don't. I think a lot of people just don't think that they have the skill set that others do, but the difference is the others actually put themselves out there. Right.
Well, it's controlling your narrative, right? What people see.
Right.
And what people perceive.
You have two people that can have the same skill set and are capable of doing the exact same thing. And one of them just happens to be more vocal and more out in the public and whatever. The other person is like, no, I'm just going to sit here and cook my food. Who's going to get the sale? Who's going to get the money?
Right. And that's the thing. You can be the best, but if nobody knows you.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing comes with, it's a two-way street. You either have enough money to survive that, that beginning and fund that, like Enigma did, right?
There's a lot to do.
Four, 5 months of not having maybe one, two, three, four, five people till it caught on.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I think the social media route where you showcase what you do and then be like, here, I'm open for business.
Shit. I mean, when I opened the table in Orlando, social media was just sort of taking off and I didn't embrace it as much as I should have. That's my own fault. But like, people are like, what do you mean I don't get choices? What do you mean there's no menu? What do you mean I have to buy a ticket?
Like, I wish I could do a great Gary Vee impression and be like, come on, bro.
Like, people were perplexed, you know? And like,
it's a new technology.
Half the people, I will say, half the people were like, hell yeah. Done. I don't even have to think about this for the rest of the day. It's at dinner. Dinner's done. Like, I booked it. We're going to show up. We're going to have a fantastic time. We're going to have the best meal ever. And I don't have to make a damn decision.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those people, super excited. And those were the ones that were booking months and months and months out. Right? How cool is that? Especially not to be, I don't know how to, just to be that person that, like, you're responsible to book date night or whatever. You know, and you're like, done. You know, and you're partner, wife, whatever, whoever is like, oh my God, it's done. Yep, done. We're going to go have a fantastic fucking time and not have to make a single decision and not have to worry about anything because it's already paid.
So, but back in that day, I think it was, if you were on it, you got the extra business for it, right? Because there is not everybody listed on that list.
No, but there were the people that were like, what do you mean there's no menu? What do you mean we don't get to pay? What do you mean I got to pay for it before we even get there? Like,
and that's the suffering of you're paying money to educate your consumer versus giving your consumer what they want. Now, do you think that our consumer these days is much more educated and they know what they want and they seek out exactly what they want?
Definitely. Definitely. More people now get it.
You know what I mean? Like, I want sushi tonight. Let me see what 10 options for sushi is. I want...
Oh, God, now. Uber Eats and all that. That never existed. So, yeah.
But do you think that's going to continue to be a thing where there's that separation of restaurants and people and, like, people... Like, eating at your house while watching TV is like a filthy experience compared to dining out and having a dialect and a face-to-face while enjoying some sophisticated food. Like, food shouldn't just be to scuff down. And I feel like whatever you order, takeout, you end up scuffing down
while
watching a movie.
Yeah, it's not an experience.
Not registering what?
No.
You're not getting the full dopamines, I feel like, from your meal versus, like, going out to experience it. One, like, I don't know what the fuck I Ubered eat 2 weeks ago.
Right, but you can tell me about the restaurant experience that you had 2 months ago.
Right.
For sure. And, that's
and
part
the people,
of your brain.
And then just the whole frequency exchange of positivity.
Yeah. It's an experience. It's the whole package. It's not just eating food. Right? Connection.
Now, with the whole food truck, I think the food trucks thing is like... It's working in some states. It's not working in others. Like, Chicago is never going to allow it to be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's food trucks, but there's maybe 20, 30 for the entire city.
Food trucks, man. Those people bust their asses.
They do.
They do. Really, really do. More
the
so.
The city makes it hard for them to serve food, but at the same time, the city wants the business to get the business. They want brick and mortar business.
Yeah.
The lease. So it's very political.
Well, in a food truck, they don't have to pay for a brick and mortar. So they're able to have lower expenses overall. But
that generally, comes, but they still pay it.
That comes at an expense. The expense is way more labor on themselves.
And I mean, way more maintenance.
Yeah, but
more often maintenance.
Sure. Sure. I mean, it's hard, man. I know a bunch of people that own food trucks, and it is hard.
I want to.
You can make good money.
For sure.
But it's hard. It's
and
solid.
The thing that, like, as a young, say, still young, it's crazy that I'm fucking whatever. But question is, do you go brick and mortar or food truck? And to me, it's a safer bet to go brick and mortar and build up your business base.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think cocktail heavy is the way to go nowadays because people don't want to eat a lot of food. People are watching their figure more than ever. People are getting healthier
mm-hmm.
more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, giving them good bites of food. And
I think people want experience. They want to have the night out. I think that's becoming more of a thing. Like, it's not like, oh, let's go to the restaurant and have a meal and then go out and do this, this, and this. It's now become more of a...
the whole package.
Yeah, we're going to go here for dinner. Let's have a night out. Let's have a whole thing.
No, I definitely see it, and that's, like, where we're headed.
You?
But, yeah, I think this is a good spot to wrap up the pod. You know,
yeah.
Heather Woodford.
Heather Woodford, or with 30.
This was Woodford Time with Late Night with Chefs, Tyler Brassel, and Vlad Brian Stiv. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Vlad Brian Stiv, Tyler Brassel. You find something, make sure to subscribe. Like, leave a thoughtful comment. And as always, we'll be back with some more great talks, conversations, some inspiration, some real life shit. And yeah,
tell us what you want to hear.
Walking in, Q-top, first course, Caesar, prawns, followed by second course, holding, filet, mid-rare, halibut.